home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, celebrating 25 years of this madness around here, 40 years of Preaknessing and Derbying. We're going to be next week at Fadley's, the new Fadley's at Lexington Market. I will be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery, if you feel lucky. We're also going to have our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions talking about water, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare out on the road for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Luke will be with us next Friday as the Arizona Diamondbacks come to town. I know one thing: by next Friday, we will have a Kentucky Derby winner that we always hope is pointed toward the second leg of the Triple Crown. I had a lengthy chat this week at Hampstead, Maryland, at the Green Mount Bowl with Alan Foreman and David Richardson about the past, the present, and the future of Maryland horse racing, the Preakness, the Maryland Jockey Club, the Magna people, and Belinda Stronach, and all of that. This guy goes back to the days of Chickie Lang and Frankie DeFrancis and Little Joe and Little Karen DeFrancis running Bowie as, or Laurel, as my friend Charlie Ekman would say. You are not featured in my 40th anniversary piece, but you are. You don't realize this. There's a scoreboard page. Your name is on it, the News American. You can go check it out. It's in the 40th anniversary thing. Dick Girardi, you're my first. You know, sports first. 40 years ago, and I'm glad you at least made it through the first 5 minutes of the 25th anniversary documentary, long enough to see Marlo.
So I got my start, Nestor, with Sports First all those years ago. So, yeah.
We share that. Literally, we share that.
I did. I'm looking forward to it. I've got, like you said, absolutely. I got the first few minutes of the doc, and I will look forward to getting the last 30, and I saw John Stedman, a little picture of Sports First, which is how I got my start in this crazy business in 1983. Does that sound right, Nestor?
That is right. September of 83. Right? Yeah. That's when Sig moved here, right?
Yeah, so, the month before the Orioles beat the Phillies in the World Series.
So the rock and roll part of Scott LaBarre in the newsroom on South Street saying to me, can you take a call from Steven Tyler in 15 minutes that sort of begat my rock and roll journey. The sports journey was a guy named Tom Robinson, who was collected the interns. Chris Pica, who is a frequenter here and has been for 20 years, was my big brother in the newsroom to show me around. He went to Loyola University. And then I walked into what we called the bullpen area, which was the area between the main newsroom and what became the sports department, which was really the commissary. Before it was the sports department, it was like the eating lounge at the News American, which was a 200-year-old building. You had to go past the morgue down this hallway, and the area was called the bullpen. And that's where Stedman's office was in the glass, and you'd walk in. And there were people everywhere doing Sports First. There were VDTs and terminals. I want you to tell some Sports First stories, but Stedman would sit in there, and he'd have his feet up on the desk, and the phone was glued to his ear, just like it was in the SIG. In the News American, he had the phone to the ear because that's really who John was. And John loved me, man. And I can't express enough what a legend my father thought he was, what a legend I thought he was, what a hero he was to me. All I really wanted to be was John Stedman. And Dick, when I went back and archived, and because of Otter and you can transcribe, you know, audio, and I have the audio, I found John Stedman saying stuff about me that when I found it at 2 a.m, I started sobbing. This was like 5-6 weeks ago. I found this audio piece where he says, and you haven't gotten to that part in the documentary, but he says, Senor, I used to say behind your back at the Sun Papers, you want to send a reporter to get into anywhere in the world, Rome, Bern. He goes through this whole list of places that I've now been in my life. And he said, put Nestor Aparicio on it. He'll get the job done. And I'm like, oh my God, John Stedman said that about me. That has to be in the documentary, Dick.
Well, John Stedman was a fabulous guy, Nestor. It's interesting. You know, I started at Sports First when it opened in September of 83. And that following May, I covered my first Kentucky Derby for the News American. And accompanying me was John Stedman. And of course, John had been to a number of them, and I was the rookie. And John was guiding me even then, a wonderful guy, and I had so many great John Stedman stories, obviously a legend in Baltimore sports. The one I remember, our good friend Mike Marlowe and I went up to New York with a guy named Jared Beads, where he was going to run from New York to Baltimore without stopping, right? And you can do the mileage. And John basically said, this is an awesome story. Go do it. Mike was doing the story. I was just along for the ride with Jared's son. And Jared actually got all the way to Philadelphia before his legs gave out. We left in the middle of the night, ran across the George Washington Bridge. And John got so behind that story. And the idea that he was going to leave at midnight on Saturday night in New York and arrive at City Hall in Baltimore on noon on Monday. That was the theory. He was this long distance rider. He didn't make it, but that wasn't the point. The journey was so cool. And John Steadman got behind it. It was very nice.
Well, Steadman was the guy with the tape measure out trying to find out exactly how far Frank Robinson's home run went. And Steadman, as was brought up to me, and your ears must have been buzzing last Wednesday afternoon as I was sitting up in Carroll County talking about you and all your horse racing guys. I had never met Alan Foreman before. And Alan Foreman, the first thing Alan says, Steadman, always thought we fudged the numbers on Preakness Day. Steadman was famous for that, bitching about them hyperinflating the crowds at the Preakness. All I cared about were bare boobies. You know, it was the 80s. That it was the lawlessness. That I didn't care about how many people came. I just cared about how much beer and fried chicken we could get into the infield and whether Sunday Silence was going to, you know, hold off Ali Sheba or whatever, you know?
I hear you. It's interesting you mentioned Frank Robinson's home run. There's not a lot of dates that stick out for me, but May 8th, 1966, Louis Tiant was the pitcher for the Indians. I was there. I was sitting on the first base side, and I don't know that I knew the ball had gone out of the stadium, but I didn't realize that John had been out there with a tape measure in the parking lot where all the cars back then, remember, they were all parked where if the guy next to you didn't leave, you couldn't leave.
You weren't going
stadium
anywhere.
Parking.
I put an aerial picture up because there's Baltimore people that share all these awesome old memories and stuff. And they know I'm a mark. You know, they know that if there's an old picture of the Circle Drive-In or something, I want to see it. You know, the old McCann. Oh, my God. Just show me a picture, you know. But like the pictures of all of that. But that era of baseball. By the way, Dick Girardi's here. And we're going to get to horse racing. We're going to get to the Derby. Dick grew up here in Baltimore. He's made a life in Philadelphia. But we were the earliest of colleagues at the very, very genesis of my what's been kind of a fun 40 years, Dick, you know, 27 Super Bowls. I've covered 65 baseball World Series games. I mean, like, I've had this incredible thing that people don't even know what I've done, but it really was seeded by my love of sports. Yours was seeded by your love of sports and gambling and understanding horse racing and having an entree into the newspaper business to get your picks right next to Rick Petros and Charlie Lambs back in the day. And I would just say the richness of journalism in our city and the people like you that have gone on and done other things. And we can go through a litany of every Frank DeFord and all of that. But this was a different time 40 years ago when the Hearst Corporation was so ambitious about sports in Baltimore that they put a sports-only tabloid newspaper here and employed people that I was with Tom Cousins out in Sacramento a couple of months ago, like people that came into this industry, Bernie Miklas, John Hawkins, legendary golf writer, like all of these people, Barry Levine, at that place at that time 40 years ago that Baltimore, and then on the 1 year, won the World Series the first month it was in business, lost the NFL team 4 months later, and then went out of business in September of 80. It lasted 1 year. And so many of us do talk about it so fondly.
Yeah, and I'm certainly one of them, Nestor. For me, it was awesome because I got to make all these mistakes, and I'd made tons of them, but nobody knew because nobody was reading it. You know, it was just, look, we came out the same time as USA Today, not exactly good timing. But it was great. And there's so many, as you mentioned, there's so many people that were there that went on to be, you know, major players in the business. I was so fortunate that after it folded after a year, I was at the Philadelphia Daily News the following February. And what Sports First did for me was give me all those clips where I could say, "Hey, here's what I could do." And I only showed him the good clips. There were a number of clips.
I put the Warren Spahn up in my video because it was typo free. It was well edited by Dave Smith, I'm sure. Dick Girardi is here. Look, we get together every year. We have talked Palestra. We've talked cheesesteaks. I'm actually in Philly this weekend. I'm coming up to see the Black Crows up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So I'll be coming through. You might find me for a cheesesteak Saturday. Palestra open Saturday. Can we do some gymnastics there? Some, I don't know. The Derby and the Preakness and the Triple Crown, I just need to reset this and give you the floor, and we're going to promote your sponsors and the people taking care of you and all that. But I sat with Alan Foreman last week and David Richardson. David and I have known each other for a number of years. He's a Dundalk guy, and I've been involved with what they're doing up at Greenmount Station from the beginning with OTB and gambling and sports wagering and mobile and all of that. I got an education last week, and we've run this piece this week. I hope everybody goes out and finds it out at Baltimore Positive. I am stunned at what's about to happen in Maryland, and you and I have talked about the uncertainty, 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 uncertainty. Keep the Preakness involved. It's an annual deal with you and I. We've been doing this. You and I have been gathering Derby and Preakness for 32 years. You and Marty McGee every single year. Clement till he died. Every year you guys come on and we talk about this, and every year it's, are we going to save it? Are we? And it feels to me, after sitting with Alan and David, and after the state legislature has done this, at least from our perspective, there is some clear vision for what we're trying to do here in Maryland with our race. But that does not belie the fact that the Derby's stronger than it's ever been, would you say?
Yeah, the Derby is absolutely stronger than it's ever been, Nestor. They just did a $200 million renovation on their paddock. And I'm sure NBC Saturday night is going to give it major play. But I'm not down there this year, but I know people that are. They say it's absolutely spectacular to see. I mean, there's actually a see-through window where the people, I don't know how much they're paying, probably like $5,000 for the 2 days, where the people can look in and see the horses in their stalls through a window, but the horses can't see them. That's one of the many deals with this new paddock. But about Pimlico, look, and I've known Alan since he was the general counsel for the Maryland Racing Commission way back in the day when I was covering down there. It's awesome what they're doing at Pimlico. I think it's great. I think it'll be great for Maryland Racing. I think it'll be great for the Preakness. Look, the couple of years when it has to move the Laurel, that's fine. We can deal with that. But the fact that it's going to stay in Baltimore, they're going to renovate the racetrack, is great for the sport, and it's great for the city. Because look, the Preakness, after the Colts, I mean, you and I will never get over that 40 years later, but you don't want to lose one of the other jewels of Maryland sports, the Preakness, and they're not going to. It's going to be in Baltimore forever, as it should be.
Well, it's been a life support issue for years. I found that my wife loved to go out and shake her ass to Bruno Mars in the Rain last year. And, you know, they lost millions of dollars paying Bruno Mars $5 million to come in. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. Belinda Stronach has run this place for a decade. She's had no interest in meeting people like me. I talk about how I've been mistreated by the Orioles and the Ravens. They threw me out of the press box last year when I had a press pass in Pimlico. I don't know if they're going to have me this year. I have no idea how these creatures behave who run these communications departments. They do everything but communicate, all of them. And the thing's been in a state of disrepair for so long. I mean, half the track is condemned, Dick, right? Like, literally, you can't walk into it. Yeah. And this has been going on for years. You follow this from afar through your racing eye, through your old Philadelphia Daily News eye, through what you do. And I should promote your sponsor right now, Bet Online. Bet Online has the most up-to-date odds and props on the – it's the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. How about a nice even number for you? And Dick and I obviously have been friends a long, long time. Are you shocked that it got saved to some degree? I mean, and the only reason I say this is I spent all of last week talking to people in Oakland. The Orioles played the Oakland – Sacramento, Las Vegas, whatever the hell they are this week. And I went back to my hatred of Catfish Hunter and Blue Moon Odom, and they were the first team I hated in 73, 74, some Dredgy, all of that, because I was five years old, right? And what's happened there is they drag. It's been a disgrace, like the Preakness for 20 years, playing in a slum. And it always felt to me like they were leaving, you know, Oakland. And it always felt to me like this was going to be a state struggle with the name of the Preakness. I felt like Gulfstream or Hollywood or Del Mar, somebody was going to come in and just say, we'll buy that. And the state's like, no, you won't. And the politicians here fought. God bless all of them. Everybody that here that fought so hard to keep something that, quite frankly, Dick, and I don't mean to be a dick, but I live here. It's a big deal to me. It's a big deal to nobody I know, the Preakness. You know what I mean? Like, they have devalued it in a way. In the same way the Orioles had 23,000 people at the ballpark on Monday night. The new guy owns it and all, but the damage has been done. It needs to be undone. It's just not roll it out, we're the Orioles, or roll it out, here's the Preakness, we saved it. I mean, it needs real watering. And as a guy that's been to a handful of derbies and you've been down there 20 times, what they do in Louisville, the way it's embraced as a civic treasure, that's been lost here. And we try. I'm doing crab races down at Fadley's 2 weeks from now, Bud Light nights and concerts, and let's do this and do that. I don't know what the air for it is, but it needs to be bigger than what it's been the last 20 years, which is this thing that I was always fearful that somebody was just going to come and give the racing people enough money to pirate it away the way Bob Irsay did. And they rename it or come up with a new Triple Crown and call it the Gulfstream Special or something, you know?
Yeah, it's not the same, Nestor, and it needs to be. And I think when the new Pimlico rises, and I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but it's going to be vastly different than what we have now. But they're going to have to get the city behind it again, realize what a treasure they have, possibly move it away from 2 weeks from the Derby. I know there's been some discussion of that, but man, whenever you try to change anything in horse racing, it's very difficult. But look, they're never going to be the Derby. The Derby is a one-off. It's you're not going to try to emulate that because nobody can. It's just impossible, 150 years of it. And the amount of money that CDI, Churchill Downs Incorporated, has, and they're not just a racetrack company. They're a gambling company. They own casinos. They own, you know, they're traded on the stock exchange. They're in a different position. And the fact that you can charge regardless of what the number is at the Derby, people will come. That's not the case in Baltimore, but they need to make it an event again. It's doable. But as you said, it's going to require some work because so much has changed in the last 20, 25 years.
Dick, for you with the Derby this year and the horses and where the scandal of, you know, I remember walking in the Costas, you know, 2 years ago on a Sunday, Mr. Costas, who owns horse races and is always, he said to me, Baffert, they have disqualified him. I'm like, what? It was Sunday morning. I'm like, I just talked to him last night. He had roses and everything was good. They were feeding the horse peppermint and it was beautiful. Where is the state of horse racing? Bob Baffert, doping, dead horses, the PETA people. I mean, all of that still revs up its engine this week, but we've got a horse race. And I love the fact that I like the suffix Ness, like, you know, my name, like Preakness. I like fierceness. Fierceness as the favorite has me talking Derby this week, Dick.
Yeah, as do I, Nestor. I'm a fierceness fan. Look, his buyer figure numbers are just way better than anybody else in the field. He's my choice for sure. And not just because of the Ness, but I do like that part of it. It's interesting. Todd Pletcher's brought 62 horses to the Derby. He has only two wins. But interestingly, he's only had one post-time favorite that was Always Dreaming in 2017, and he won. This is going to be his second post-time favorite in Fierceness, and I think it's the best horse he's ever brought to the Derby. If he runs back to how he won the Florida Derby or the Breeders' Cup, nobody has a chance to beat him. The only issue is what happens if he doesn't break well. In the two races he broke poorly, he ran very poorly. So that's the issue. If he gets out of the gate and he's in a position – when they hit the finish line the first time, which is a quarter mile from the starting gate, then I think he's going to win and probably win pretty convincingly. Number of good prop bets, by the way, on Bet Online. The one I like the most, Nestor, is West Saratoga for last is 6-1. I think he's got a real chance to be last. One of my all-time favorite prop bets for last. And horse I like at a long shot is Honor Marie. Probably going to be 20-1 in the race as a chance, I think, to be second or third. You can get 6-1 on Honor Marie to be in the top three. I think that's also a good prop bet as well. And the other one I'll give you, again, it's on Bet Online, over under on margin of victory. It's a length and a half.
So hold on. I have to understand all of these prop bets. I'm just, it's like rereading the form all over again with you and Charlie teaching me this back in 84.
Yeah. So over under on how much the margin of victory is going to be is a length and a half. But if you like fierceness, as you do and I do, he's won his three races by a combined 30 lengths. His average margin of victory is 10 lengths. All you got to do is beat a length and a half. And the good news is, even if he doesn't win, you got the rest of the field to win by more than a length and a half. So I like the over on the length and a half, even money proposition on BetOnline.
Dick, when did life begin where you could bet on which horse finishes last? No?
Say that again, Nestor.
At what point could we start betting on when a horse could finish last?
Yeah, that's been around for a number of years. I'll tell you a great Andy Byer story. You'll love this. The legend from the Washington Post, who, my mentor in the game, and you know, I'm part of the Byer Speed Figure team and have been for a number of years.
I did not know that. But tell me your story, and then I'm going to ask you about that in general. Go ahead.
Sure. So Andy, in 1989, there was the third choice in the race. This is Easy Goer Sunday Silence this year. The third choice in the race is a horse called Western Playboy. And the word was out the whole week that he had some issues. There just was something off with him. But they ran him anyway. And everybody, of course, is watching the race, and they're all looking at Sunday Silence as he's winning the race. Easy Goer closes for second. Except Byer is looking at the back of the pack, where a jockey named Chris DiCarlo is riding Faultless Ensign like his life depends on him finishing 16th. And in fact, it does depend on, Byers depends on it, because he has Western Playboy for last, and he's desperately trying to get Faultless Ensign up over Western Playboy, and he beats him at the wire. And Byer tells the story the next day how he's rooting like a wild man for Western Playboy to finish last. And he did. And so that was 1989. So it's been around at least that long where you could bet a horse to be last.
Obviously we discussed your degenerative gambling a year ago and whether you're ahead or behind after all of these years or expertise. I had you and Marty McGee both tell me you're way behind. So I pointed that out to Alan Foreman on the air last week as well.
I did not tell you I was way behind, because I'm not way behind.
You're ahead?
Well ahead.
You're ahead for life.
Well ahead.
Really?
Correct.
So it's been a good investment of your time over 40 years.
100%.
See, I didn't know. See, I stand corrected. I have often thought, like, who actually does win if you can't win? If you're not winning at horse racing, who could possibly win? That's what I think.
It's a really, really hard game. You can't get upset when you get beat, because you will get beat. Anybody that tells you they win all the time, you automatically dismiss them. You know they're full of it. Look, Lester, 5 years ago at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge 2019, my partners and I finished third. We hit for a quarter million. So that was a nice day. And, you know, I got a pretty significant percentage of that. That was a nice score. Ray Tannehill is a legend in Baltimore, sadly passed away a number of years ago. Ray and I finished first, second, and third in the Penn National World Series of Handicapping. Our buddy Dave Cottle, the former Maryland lacrosse coach, was our partner when we won it. He was actually our beard. He was the guy who was putting our bets up, because everybody knew who Ray and I were, and we wanted somebody that nobody knew putting our bets up with 6 minutes to post, so nobody would know that it was our bets. We hit for 100,000 that day. So yeah, we've had some nice scores through the years. And
but I mean, if you don't hit for 100,000, would you be ahead?
I've also had some brutal beats. Anybody that tells you they win all the time, forget them. They're just not telling you the truth.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, and we always tell people gamble responsibly. I mean, so I'm the most responsible horse racing person in the world. I'm a $2 bettor. You know, I bet fun names. Sometimes I read the form and try to take it seriously. But that's when I'll think myself. Because if you read the form, you'll just bet the favorite. You know, if you're a neophyte, right? I mean, the favorite's the favorite for a reason, because it looks like the best horse most of the time, right?
Right. And keep in mind, the favorite wins about 30% of the time, which means the favorite does not win 70% of the time. So, yeah, that's not, you can look at it that way. And one of the keys to the game, Nestor, is identifying really good favorites, you know, like a Flight Line in the Breeders' Cup, where he literally couldn't lose, and vulnerable favorites. Like a lot of people think fierceness is vulnerable on Saturday. And look, he could be because he's got a problem if he doesn't break well. So there will be people betting against him for that reason. That's fine. I'm betting on him because his speed figures just dominate the field. And I'm more than anything a data guy. And data to me is, you know, who's the fastest horse in a race? And that's how you learn how who the fastest horse in a race is, by the speed figures.
Dick Girardi is here, courtesy of Bet Online. Tell everybody about the buyer speed figures and numbers, because you just casually threw that out there. I mean, I remember Andy Beyer being the studious guy before they threw me out of the press box that I've sat in 1,000 times at Pimlico last year. I would see Andy there. I left Andy alone. Andy to me was like, I never talked to Cal Sr. I was very intimidated by him. There's just certain people that are so serious, and I don't want to say curmudgeonly, but your perception is leave them alone because they're doing things and they don't want to be bothered, and you shouldn't bother them because they're doing important things that you should leave them alone. And that was before, I don't know when the buyer speed figure became a thing, maybe mid to late 90s, it became a named item, but Andy was doing it a lot. He and Vinny Perrone, and I mean, all those guys I remember seeing, but give everybody the story of it, because it started as a thing amongst you guys, I think, in the press box, and then it became a thing they put in the paper in the Washington Post, and it's now like an ERA for a pitcher, right? Like, literally, it's like, it's beyond an opinion. It's a statistic that is widely recognized as the most important analytic in horse racing, right?
That is correct. And, you know, Andy, for the people that don't know, and I suspect most people listening do know, he's a longtime racing columnist for the Washington Post, before that for the Washington Star. And his story is an awesome one. I mean, he was a Harvard grad, but he passed on his final Chaucer exam to go bet on Amberoid in the 1966 Belmont Stakes. That's kind of yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Andy actually ever got his diploma or not, but he's a brilliant guy. And when he was there, he had a classmate, and he wrote about it in his wonderful book, Picking Winners, which was a huge influence on me getting into the game. And the book came out in the mid-70s. He had a classmate named Sheldon Kovitz who explained to him the difference in times relative to how far horses run, right? So, like, let's say, his analogy has always been, If you're a sprinter, right, and you're about a second off the fastest 100 meter time, well, you're okay, but you're probably a college sprinter. But if you're a second off the fastest mile time, you're in the Olympics, right? So that it matters more the longer the distance. And it's explained through the buyer figures. To your point, they've been now published for 30 years, first in the Racing Times, which went out of business after a year, and in a racing form for now the last 30 years, and have been part of the really, if you're into horse racing, you know what the buyer speed figure means. And essentially how it's compiled, Nestor, there's several of us, I think seven or eight of us around the country that look at every track in the country, and we're assigned different racetracks. Randy Moss from NBC is part of our team, by the way. He's been an original with us from the beginning. Mark Hopkins and Andy own the company. And what you're trying to find out is, time by itself doesn't really mean anything, but time is a context in how fast or slow is the racing surface. And what the numbers do is basically you take that time, you average all the times for a particular day, then you come up with what we call a track variance, how fast or slow is the racetrack, and then all that's converted into a number. It's the opposite of golf. The higher the number, the better. Like the great horses, like a Flight Line, American Pharaoh, they could be up in the 120s. A Fierceness is a 110 in the Florida Derby. That's why he's dominant in the numbers. Like the Kentucky Derby, typically won with like 105 number or something like that. So again, the higher the number, the faster the horse. You'll see horses running at Pimlico in a couple of weeks that'll run 60s. They might be a $5,000 claiming horse. And then you try to equate time 6 furlongs versus a mile to 16th. It sounds more complicated than it actually is, but it's one of those things. It's like riding a bike. Once you understand it, it's not that complicated. In fact, I have a sheet right in front of me where I got to do some speed figures here when I get off with you for a track in Ohio, Thistledown. That's one of the tracks that I'm assigned.
Man, I always forget how like smart you are. And no offense to you, but Bayer, now it comes to me. He was too smart for me to talk to. I didn't have that problem with you or some other people, but I left him alone in the corner because I knew he must have been a Harvard guy. Dick Girardi's here on behalf of BetOnline. He's been my friend for 40 years. No one knows more about the horse racing. And I apologize for thinking you were behind all these years. I've untold that story now that I know you've been a big winner in all this. Any thoughts on the Preakness before we get to, 2 weeks from now? As will the winner go now? Like, where are we in this? How attractive is the Preakness in the industry to make sure that the Triple Crown remains what it was? Because we've had that issue going back to when we lost you in Philadelphia. We lost Spend the
Yeah.
Buck that year too. But we've had occasions where the horse doesn't come here, and that's always, it's a tragedy for the Preakness when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it happened 2 years ago with Rich Strike, who was like the accidental winner of the Kentucky Derby. I mean, it was a total fluke. He never won another race. So I don't know that the Preakness really missed out, other than having the 80-1 shot there in the story. Look, Nestor, it's become a problem because of the 2 weeks. Everybody understands that horses at that level don't run back in 2 weeks anymore. Now, let's say Fierceness wins the race. Todd Pletcher never runs horses back in 2 weeks. In fact, the two Derby winners that came to the Preakness, they ran terrible. I mean, they were both awful because Todd typically doesn't do that. I don't get any sense that he wouldn't come this year. Mike Rapoli, I know, would love to. First, he wants to win the Derby. He's been in the vicinity a few times and he's had horses scratched on the day of the race, like Forte last year. So I don't know what will happen, but I surely hope the Derby winner comes. I do know that Bob Baffert's going to be represented. He was represented last year with National Treasure, who we gave out on your show last year.
Did.
And Muth is going to be Baffert's horse this year. And if he's not the favorite, he'll be no worse than the second choice. And if some long shot wins the Derby, then he's going to be the favorite. Muth will be the favorite in the Preakness. And of course, Bob owns the Preakness and has nothing but good things to say about Baltimore. And thankfully, the people in Maryland have not done what Churchill Downs has done. They understood that what happened with Medina Spirit, he was not Lance Armstrong Jr. It just, the whole thing is just silly. And I don't know why this ban is still going on, but that is another story for
So
another
the
day.
ban is still going on with Baffert. Yes.
It is. Yeah. I mean, they announced it originally as a 2 year ban. Everybody thought it was up after last year's Derby. And then on July 1st of last year, Churchill said, we're extending it. And they didn't say they're extending it for a year. They're extending it at least through this year. That doesn't mean it's not going to continue. We don't really know what's going to happen.
All the pissing and moaning, fix it. We're invested in it now, right? I mean, State of Maryland has said this is important. You could go listen to my conversation with Alan Foreman this week and David Richardson as well. And Dick, I love having you on, man. It's always good to see you. Now that I know you're ahead in horse racing, I will not feel bad when you fork over the $12 for that cheesesteak we're going to get in Philly.
It's on me, pal. Whenever you come up, Joe's
Ooh, I'm getting
Steak and
extra
Soda.
cheese.
Yeah, Joe's Steak and Soda Shop, right on Girard Avenue, right in Fishtown, just outside of Center City, Philadelphia.
So I'm going to say this to you as kindly as I can. I'm spending the evening on Friday in the great state of Pennsylvania. I'm coming back through Philadelphia. I have no chance of getting a cheesesteak with you on Derby Day, right? There's no.
Derby Day, I will be gambling all day long.
See, exactly. Well, you know what I
Yeah.
could do? I should get a cheesesteak and bring it to you and be a good friend to you. All you've
I
done for me, I should bring
would
you a meal on Derby Day, appropriate. Maybe I'll do that because I
be
don't get
nice.
north of Philly much. I mean, hey, what the
Yeah.
hell's up there? Bucks County? No, I don't, So I'm literally coming through your neighborhood. I might bring you a Joe's cheesesteak, especially since I got the gambling part of you all wrong. Not the degenerative part, just the fact that you were ahead. So I love you, Dick. I appreciate you, and I hope we get together again soon.
Sounds good. Nestor, you're the best. Thanks, pal.
2 weeks from today, we'll have the Derby winner. We'll talk about it, all right? Dick
Sounds
Girardi's here,
good.
courtesy of Bet Online. My thanks to Jimmy Shapiro as well. Old friends, nothing like old friends from Radio Row at the Super Bowl, where they threw me out of because I don't know my long hair, I don't know my last name. Go to Bet Online for the most up-to-date odds and props on the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. Preakness is 2 weeks away. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We have Preakness fever and Oriole fever, and go Birds.